everybody. Welcome to the February edition of In the Now. Slip Mode in the house.
Spike in the house, yo.
VR, wondering if cognitive dissonance really is the mother of invention.
Captain Alibaba here.
Captain Alibaba's new to the show.
Welcome.
Yes, thank you. Appreciate that.
And for anybody who's listened to previous shows, like Captain Alibaba, Spike is actually formerly known as
JP.
JP.
I've metamorphosized since then. And it was not easy, let me tell you.
He is now a spiky man.
He's gained an edge, and I'm not sure how sharp it is yet.
Or he does have smelly feet, though.
Do I really? I don't think I do.
I don't know. You know,
well, tell us. He smells his feet a lot, so really.
Mine are pretty smelly, so I think it's probably. We're probably.
I think I'm going to go with yours, actually.
Awesome. All right, Captain Alibaba, you gotta clue us in and tell us a little bit about yourself. We had Pestilence before. I tried to get him today. He was sick, but he told us a little bit about who he was and what he didn't want you to know about.
You should have told me that before I agreed to come on the show.
Oh,
I'm just kidding. I'm just another random geek. You know,
I'm just a poorly e-belled writer.
That's me
for Gen 2.
Exactly.
And for all you radio listeners, we actually do have a 5,000 watt. Spotlight on him at this time. And he's beginning to sweat just a little bit.
Yeah. We're also throwing rocks and broken glass at him. So
it's part of the fun and the initiation here at In the Now. For those of you who probably noticed that we didn't do a few shows for a while, that's because JP got busy with work, Spike, and VR basically got busy with Giant Industries. And I got busy with work, and we never had Captain Alibaba here, so...
He was getting busy with the ladies.
With the ladies. Plus, I was looking for some new people out there, and maybe since all that business was going on, I didn't want to let that drown the quality of the show and make it not worth listening to or even worth recording. So I think we're back with a renewed sense, and...
not a renewed sense of anything in particular, but just a renewed sense.
Yeah, we feel renewed, so the energy's there.
We have a new vision that not to have the show be a waste of electrons.
That was my vision all along. See the kind of people we hire here at In the Now. Okay.
Hire? You guys get paid?
No.
No, we don't.
Did you
get
your
benefit package fund up there?
Sweet. All right, well, I'm going to lead into the first story, and the way that In and Out is just for everyone here in the room, it's not anything different than what we had before, other than if you have a story, let me know, and we usually let that know before the show, but jump in any time, and I just usually will bring in stories that people can talk to so we at least have content for sure. So feel free to jump in with any comments or any new news. Here's a bit of news that's actually from mid-last month, but it's Microsoft told to ship Java in 120 days. For those of you who don't know, Windows XP never included Java as a default component in its operating system. So that really screwed a lot of people that use Java, and it was pretty much another Big Brother tactic. U.S. District Judge J. Fredericks Motz summoned lawyers from both sides in the private antitrust suit to a special hearing in their failure to agree on the exact terms of a preliminary injunction. And basically he says, I can't sit here hearing and hearing, Motz said. I want this done in 120 days. So I think it's a good thing, and trying to get Microsoft to shape up. And, they only shape up when they're pretty much smacked down and told to. Which is pretty crappy, and it's another reason why I don't use it unless I have to, which I don't, which means if I do, it's because somebody else did and they're paying me to do it.
But it is really kind of neat to see that Microsoft is so essentially powerful that they can pick and choose what kind of other like accessories that they would want to be utilized, a part of theirs, that they're not trying to be this great platform that everybody can use.
They already did that before. They get everybody used to it. It's like drugs, man. They get everybody used to it, and then they make it bad, and they make you pay for the good stuff.
Yeah, you're right, though. They can make or break someone just based on including it in their operating system, since they're so prominent. And
yeah, so they become the hegemony of,
yeah,
of
the default standard.
Yeah. So they've decided, oh, we don't want to, you know, don't want to work with Java anymore, and Java can essentially become extinct because Microsoft doesn't want to use them.
Well, Java has they have their own operating system, Sun. They have their own operating system that gets used a lot in the business world on server end, and so it wouldn't really go extinct, but
which I just picked up for Sun machines, no doubt.
Yeah.
But it would become it would be pushed off into this little mountain valley.
Yeah, exactly.
That no one would have much.
But actually, I just read a story on Slashdot before I came over here today about Sun apparently released a memo saying that they shouldn't use Java, and they gave like a list of a bunch of programming languages that accomplish what Java is supposed to accomplish, and they do it better
for internal use.
Yeah, they said they shouldn't use Java for internal use.
That's pretty bad when you're a software developer. People, let's not use our own software.
We were going to come out with Java processors, Java workstations. We even made this operating system or this code to accomplish many tasks. But now, you know, just go back to using what you were using 10 years ago, and it should be okay.
Just go back to assembly. It's better than everything.
I don't know. I think Java is enough now, has gotten far enough that it can survive without, perhaps survived. It's so prominent out there, like on the web and everything, that without being already pre-installed, enough people will probably grab it, you know? Like Flash, or doesn't come in pre-installed, but it's still a lot of people download it just because it's used on so many sites. And I think now the web probably is a new way for there to be default standards out there, that if you're hitting a bunch of sites, unless you're a security freak or anything, if you're hitting a bunch of sites and there's a component on a lot of them, you're going to download it pretty much. So it's another way for something to get out there a lot without being pre-installed on the OS.
Good point.
Awesome. All right.
2 points for that one.
2 points.
Well, 1.5 for them.
Yeah, that's just, you know, another thing, too, that even we just said that Microsoft is prominent, so that the fact that they do such things will make or break somebody, but we've always talked in the past about, like, Linux and other operating systems. I mean, if it wasn't Linux, if it was called, like, Genix, you know, whatever it's called, I mean, we would have talked about it and said, hey, if it was a good alternative. And since that's actually made a lot of headway, which we'll probably talk about in a few other stories, it's actually made Microsoft realize that there's a new bully on the block. So some of their tactics probably won't work anymore.
But now, what's bringing this question up is, has Microsoft actually using the U.S. government as a kind of a mentor for its business plan, or is the U.S. government using Microsoft as its business plan and taking over the world?
Well, you know, I think it's probably the first portion that you had said. I even have a story that probably leads a little bit towards down that path of what you're speaking on. Let me pull it out here. You can keep chatting.
Historically, most government offices have used, obviously, Microsoft as a OS of choice. But now a lot of, and not just the U.S. government, but governments around the world, but they're just coming up relatively frequently now. You see stories about governments that are either examining or switching to open source OSs, and that has Microsoft shaken in their collective boots. So,
Panama was one of the first down in Panama. I don't know if anybody heard about that. It was a few months ago. There's a prime minister down in Panama, and he's a real advocate of open source.
And he wrote that. Didn't he write a letter?
Yeah.
Yeah, I read that. That was pretty cool. He brought up a lot of good points.
He basically got the entire Panama government to switch over to using open source, not necessarily Linux, but any open source instead of Microsoft and their.
So there's ways to buck some of our imperialism of the world.
Yeah, and now, like, even Japan is the latest, and a lot of governments have announced
Germany
looking into using open source.
There's actually our own government is actually, they're developing their own branch of the Linux kernel to be more secure.
Yeah, FBI has their own.
Is it the NSA?
CIA, actually.
Is the NSA, actually.
NSA, yeah. They have their own kernel. And you can actually download their kernel, actually, and use it.
China's making their own chips, but that's a whole other.
You know, I read this statistically, China actually has 96% of its software is pirated. 96%. Including business, government, home, everybody.
I would think we'd have them beat everybody pirate software here.
No. We'll see
in a billion people. You know,
well, see, in China, not as many people have computers, though. You know, like, there's not as many people out there to pirate software.
Well, yeah, it's just their whole culture of pirating, like, U.S. stuff. I mean, pretty much everything there. Like,
well, I mean, a lot of things, too, is, like, I got a buddy, and he's an architect, and he actually moved from here back to China where he's originally from. And the way that they do business is quite different. And what he's describing is the architectural field, but it's like that in a lot of areas where basically if he wants to go out and get a project, he'll find out what the project is, and then he'll put together like a proposal, and then they'll say, well, you're possibly accepted, and they might even accept two others. Now, in here, they'll just, in the United States, they'll just choose one. Now, if they choose like three or so, then they'll say, well, we want you to produce some work for the first floor. Let's say it's a five-story building. And then he starts producing work. Granted, he hasn't gotten paid a dime, and nor is he going to be, like, for sure he's going to even get any money for the work he's doing. So what he does is he'll put something together. Hopefully it sells, and if it does, it does. If it doesn't, it doesn't. Now what happens is, as they're paying, let's just say he picked you for the job, and you're sitting there developing this project, and they're going to pay you. Let's just say at a point, they could be paying you and say, well, I don't have enough money to finish the job to pay you, but I'll allow you, my cousin owns a restaurant, so you can go in and get, like, X amount of free meals from him. And then the contractor begins to build the building. They find a contractor guy, builds the building, and the contractor, like, stops on, like, the second floor and says, we're not, and the owner says, well, I don't think I can pay you right now. And the contractor's like, well, you know, we're not going to finish the building. He's like, well, how about this? My cousin owns a car dealership, and I'll get you and all your managers a car. So it's weird. It's kind of just like a
we play Monopoly. That's weird. It's like, all right, I'll let you land here this one time, but the next two times I land on Illinois, I get off free with up to four houses, and then you get one additional Sand Baltic with up to two houses.
Yeah, and it's like that, I think, with software. They're like, you know, they're probably going to try to find the best deal, so they just pirate it. And actually, one of my managers was there, and when he went there, they just sell software on the streets for like $5. He showed me these two discs, and they had like, it was just jam-packed with like Microsoft like software.
There's no law in China against that, is there?
No.
Unless there is international copyright and patents. Mm-hmm.
But I did, like I read in... what is it, in Russia, like any works that were produced before 1995 or something like that, outside of Russia, are considered in the public domain in Russia.
Oh, wow.
That's pretty crazy, huh?
And also, with China, they even noticed that with their own software developers, the problem with piracy, so I think they are going to try to do some cracking down, but it's when you're at 96%, good luck on even moving that to 85%.
I don't know if I would really consider cutting and pasting development. That's all they do is pirate software.
Yeah. But back with what we're talking about with Microsoft and the government, this is an article basically about Microsoft plans to share more of their source code with the government, and I think that's part of a ploy to not get them to leave their products. Microsoft will expand the sharing of the underlying code with its Windows programs to help governments and agencies such as Russia and North Atlantic Treaty Organization to improve computer security. Why can't they do it themselves, actually?
What a good way to get the government on your side. Show them all your crappy source code.
And tell them to fix it.
Well, and you get all the government resources to help you make your product better for free.
Well, yeah. I don't think that they're actually going to... I mean, think about it. If you're going to get this code, I mean, what are you going to do with it? The government's not going to fix it for them. I think it's just something to say that they're kind of doing some open source thing, but in the end, I really don't think it produces anything at all. The open source, really, its strength is that everybody has access to it, and anybody can modify it and change it. Just because, you know, some office with 30 government officials have access to their code, you know, and 20 governments doesn't really mean anything compared to having it access to tens of thousands of people and having it modified and the best changes get put in, you know, on everything, just not a certain portion of the operating system.
In other words, too little, too late.
Pretty much.
It's, instead of having like five people trying to refine it and making it more usable and more efficient and safer and more secure, that you have thousands of people doing that very same thing. And which is, it's kind of like the old story of the that learning computer, which went through thousands of generations of making it better, quicker, and it was beyond any of their expectations because there was more of it working on making it better.
That was one of Microsoft's big arguments against open source, is that everybody can see the source code and it's a lot easier to find bugs and vulnerabilities in it. But if you have everybody,
they're
going to
want to fix
the source code,
exploit it all the
everything's
time.
Fixed all the time. If there's nothing wrong with the source code, there's nothing wrong with letting other people see it.
Yeah, and it's the same thing as, like, if somebody sees it, and let's just say they want to do the malicious thing, the first thing they do, okay, somebody does it and they exploit it, and then what happens?
It's found out about it.
Yeah,
it's fixed the next
it's
day.
It's fixed because a large majority want to actually use the operating system where it's not broken.
So as opposed to a closed source bug, somebody sees it and exploits it. Maybe somebody else figures it out. They report it, and maybe it takes them a few months to get back. Maybe they never figure it out or find out where it is.
Yeah. This is a nice little segue here into the Slammer, SQL Slammer thing.
Oh, yeah, that's even the best. Okay.
6-month-old vulnerability utilized, and it was a closed source vulnerability, and I'm not sure. I guess they patched it 6 months ago, and somebody forgot to patch their system. And then
my company's guilty.
I guess a lot of people are guilty of not patching their systems.
Yeah. Among them, Microsoft themselves.
Yes, they had a lot of servers non-patched.
Well, I'll just end with this last quote on this one article, and then I'll grab that other one. Basically, it said Microsoft has resisted calls from rivals to open up its source code during the company's antitrust case. Has it in the last 18 months begun to make code available to governments, as well as key customers and partners in effort to compete with Linux. But like I said, who cares, because too little too late, like Spike had said.
Better than nothing, I guess.
All right. You guys can fill the dead time until I find this article.
Dead air.
Are you saying dead air, or are you saying deader?
Dead air.
I know.
It's fun.
We could put a commercial in here.
All right, article found. I'm still using paper, which is actually works well for
low tech.
Thanks. It was pretty much, it was called the Slammer or the Sapphire. When I was watching Bug Track the very night it happened, one guy called it Sequel Hell. Sequel. Or Sequel Hell. And they wanted to have it named that, but I guess this official company that the security head named
that.
Man,
I want to be the guy with that job. Like, oh, hey, Spike, we need you to name this virus. All right, the killer. Or just the killer, okay? All right, thanks. Go back to reading your book there.
To go along with that, is it was a virus that basically exploited a buffer overrun and allowed them to get access to run arbitrary code on that machine. The code didn't do anything like a rootkit or a backdoor or anything like that. Basically, it just propagated itself by, it chose a random IP address and tried to attack it, and then if it didn't work, it would just continually going on. But if you think about it, this one machine is doing that, and whoever, if it gets another machine, then the other machine's doing it, and the other machine does that, and it goes so on. And a lot of these, I mean, if you're running SQL anyways and it's sitting on the web, most of them are probably websites that have a lot of bandwidth. So if you've got a lot of computers with a lot of bandwidth and they're constantly sending out all this trash junk to all sorts of IP addresses, it's going to affect, I mean, a lot of people. It didn't, you know, for me exactly, I didn't have any latency too much. There is a website that you can check that will actually tell you what the current latency on the backbones are. And that website is, once I pull it up, actually while that's coming up, to add a Bank of America, they must be using SQL to do a lot of their automatic teller machines, and over 13,000 automatic teller machines were unable to process customer transactions. Now that's a lot. And actually, I even met somebody that I know that said that they had tried to use the teller that weekend and they couldn't because of this virus. If you go to www.internetpulse.net. It's a pretty cool site that will actually tell you the latency times from major backbone providers, from just their own lines to also, let's just say you want to see what it is to go from UUNet to Sprint and what their latency times are. And when I was watching that that night, their latency times were in the critical. They have a color-coded system, which is above 180 milliseconds, and I had seen latency times of 250 milliseconds, which is extremely bad for a backbone provider.
Now, also, it could have been even worse, like as it's reading in several places. For one thing, it happened on a Sunday, which is non-business hours. If it would have hit during business hours, it could have had side effects. It could have affected Wall Street or 911 routing and stuff like that. So, plus, it only propagated itself. Imagine if it would have actually been attempting to do something destructive.
I heard on one of the websites that I watched, it was actually an accident that it propagated itself. It was a misplaced decimal point.
Are you sure? Because I thought they were.
That was one of the things I heard. It was like it was one of the possibilities of why it was propagating, because it doesn't really make any sense. It would make sense for something like this to go around and nobody notice it, because it's on UDP. Nobody would notice that, and now there's a back door in their site.
Well, it happened. I'm throwing in facts along with other things. It happened midnight on Saturday, and within a few hours, 25,000 back-end database servers were affected. But what I heard as far as where it came from, they're trying to track it, and the thing that I remember to add is that they had looked at the source code a bit, and it had some reference to, and I'm trying to remember the name of the hacker group, but it's a Asian hacker group, and they don't know if exactly it was them that had originally started it. They do have reports that the virus originated from, I think it was Korea or China, one of the Asian countries. It wasn't Japan, and that's where it originated, but it could have started anywhere, because, I mean, I could be, you know, here in the United States and execute something somewhere else. But they don't have any facts as far as exactly where it came from or how to stop it. That's usually the case with things like this. But that's the details I heard on that.
One of the facts I heard on a TV show was that it doubled itself every 8 seconds. The worm doubled itself, like on as many servers as it's on.
During its peak expansion period.
Yeah. Because like once it's full, it's not going to double anymore. But yeah.
Man, that's insane.
That was it was supposedly the fastest one, and the second fastest one was Code Red, which doubled itself every 30 minutes at its top.
Pretty peak. Good improvement over that.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
It was a much smaller code, though. Code Red was a lot bigger. It did a lot more than just send itself out over UDP to a bunch of other servers.
Yeah. But also to add, we had mentioned it, but to really focus on it, is that, yeah, Microsoft themselves, they've had this, they had a release for a patch for the bug for at least 6 months. But actually, they were probably one of the biggest, hardest-hit people by it, because they didn't themselves patch their own servers, which is a pretty bad thing if you're, I don't know, I guess I consistently do this, is bash Microsoft, but I guess you just can't help it. I mean, seriously, they've been telling everybody, they tell everybody to just patch their machines, you know, with their patches, along with the fact that they've got so many gaping holes begin with, and then
some of which are in the patches.
Yeah,
so you have to have patches for the patches that
for
you're
patches,
trying to
for the
yeah,
patches for the patches.
And then on top of that, they don't even follow their own guidelines. So how do they expect their consumers to do the same thing?
Of course, the slammer came in through some obscure port anyway, and there's no reason in most cases that port would have had to be open. So
yeah, but just another example of.
Actually, this worm, the port 1394, it's used for SQL, which is usually only on database and servers. There's actually another program, I forget what it was called, that was also affected. It used a smaller version of SQL within Windows applications, and that was, like, always open on all Windows boxes.
Hmm.
I forget what it was called.
I actually don't know that program.
It's not really, it's not like a program, it's like a service that's automatically started. For
that's
like
right.
Runs SQL in the background.
Yeah, they do have
like mini SQL. It's called like E something.
It's some like software applications that actually use like access modules or like use access code will tie a little bit into SQL, and it's kind of a small. It's included with some programs that need a type of small database that's underlying within the application, and they run that service.
I'm nodding my head. People at home can't see that. But vigorously, I might add.
What? Huh? I just woke up. Sorry.
Yeah, VR doesn't do much computer stuff. He has me fix his computer. But
and a darn good job he does.
Thank you very much.
If you'd stop spilling soda all over it, then it wouldn't be an issue.
Did you break your cup holder?
Yeah. I was rambunctious with it when it broke the last time, and it just went all over the place. It was really, really cool. There's still soda everywhere. It's kind of artistic. I think I'm just going to leave it.
I did accidentally spill vegetable soup on Slipmode's keyboard.
That's right, you
about
did.
About fifth grade, and it took him about 2 years to replace it. So he was kind of mad at me for that 2 years. At least that's why he told me the keyboard was sticky. Wasn't sure if I wanted to go there.
But you did. Oh, man. Nothing but fun here at in the Know. Okay. I guess we're going to lead on to another announcement about another security hold that happened this month. Sprint DSL customers, and I'm reading straight from the article, are at a risk of having their email addresses and passwords stolen, even if their computers are powered off. Basically, the DSL modem, the Xi XL Prestige 642 and 645 models, have a default password of 1234. So,
such good security.
That reminds me of Spaceballs.
I know, they could have at least made it 1235.
And the password is. So, basically, what that means to the computer illiterate is that what the router does, it's a box that provides a connection between your internet provider and your home system, and what the router will do is translate your traffic and send it in the proper direction so that you get internet service. What happens if there's a lot of routers will have it so you can log into them and change any settings that you may have in there for your internet service. The problem with that, if you have a bad password like that, is that somebody can log into your router. They can make changes to it. They could even route traffic to another area and possibly sniff it for any information that you may send across. So that's pretty bad for you. And also the problem with developing routers that have default passwords such as that is that it gets distributed to a large audience of people.
And there's always going to be some baseline that's not going to change the password. Like,
yeah.
Even if
there's actually a lot of them.
Yeah. The baseline's about 65% probably.
Yeah.
And the fact that happens is that, let's just say I use that service, which I don't, but if I did, and if I was malicious enough, it wouldn't be too hard to find out. It would be easy as heck even to find out all the other IP addresses of possible hosts that are on the ISP with me. And I could just try to exploit that router, and I'm sure I would have a 95% success rate of making that happen. How's it going there?
That's Pierre? Quite the fitness of being able to exploit and cultivate other things that you want to do. That you go out there and you send a virus or take over bandwidth or whatever you want to do, and be able to do that and proliferate it.
Another thing you could do, actually, is just change the password to another password. So even if they read about it, usually an ISP, if they're good, I know Quest, if they have problems, they'll send out a letter to all their subscribers. But maybe Sprint would say send an email out to all their subscribers and explain how to fix the problem. And if you change the password yourself, another thing to keeping access is that they would try to do what the document had said. And then they'd say, oh, screw it, I don't understand how to do this thing anyways, because they couldn't log in because you changed the password, and you still own the box, you know. And a lot of these people are not going to sit on customer support phone line for 20 minutes, you know, telling them how to power off the router and then put it back on and then do some serial connection and hit enter at this special time and then change the magic number. And you know,
a little dance and, you know, rattle your mouse. And
20 minutes, what text support number have you been calling?
Well, yeah, that's true. I was trying.
I wait about an hour or two.
Actually, let's have a little time to space away from the stories. I want VR to tell us about his problem. I think you've told me that you've talked to about every customer support guy at Cox Cable.
Oh, yeah. That's
Cable. not my best friends.
Yeah, I've actually gone through. I've had every bit of their hardware replaced twice. They are actually gotten to the point where they are so annoyed with me that they're digging up the main line and replacing it to pacify me. But this has taken me months of constantly being on the phone. I don't think I've actually, I think I've paid maybe 5% of my high-speed internet bill because it is down that much.
Oh, man.
Like, every time, and it's only on, I finally figured out when it's on.
This portion of the In and Out Show is brought to you by Quest Communications. get your internet connection at quest.com.
It's on in the afternoon. I finally figured this out. It's taken me like 2 months to do that because the cable that they ran was so cheap and is like so old that the sprinklers get, you know, the water gets down and shorts out the cable.
Oh my goodness.
That's the only thing I can even fathom about it. They've given me everything.
I've actually read about that's actually like a big problem. Like up in northern Washington, in some of the less rural areas, they have the cable provider up there. I don't know who it is. I think it's Comcast. The cable used to go out like at certain times of the day because it was so cold. And it was really cold, and the cables they weren't working, and so the connection just went down.
Yeah, probably because it would contract and actually pull apart a little bit from the connectors.
Yeah.
And create too much resistance there.
Yeah, so they've been going through around that area, and they've been replacing all the cables with more weather-resistant cables.
Oh, man, when I first got Cox at home, oh, boy, I was not a happy customer. I was working from home, telecommuting and everything, and I could not get an internet connection. And we were over there looking. Everything looked to be right on our end. We told them that we had set it up right. They insisted on walking us through this pathetic installation process that took about 20 minutes, about 5 times to check all our settings and everything like that. Finally, after a few days, like, we found out they had just given me a bad IP address. It was, like, dropping packets. And I was like, I tried to get them to give me $500. It's like, you know, I'm working from home. You guys totally screwed me over. But they're like, okay, we won't charge you for the last week. We'll take that $5 off your bill, sir.
Isn't that just so nice? And now every time I call, they offer me this maintenance insurance.
Why should you have to pay for insurance for their service?
Well, see, the thing is that if the problem with the cable, if it's my fault, if it's in my computer, then if they come out, they'll either charge me $50 every time it's my fault, or I can pay this $50 for a year, and if it's my fault, they go, well, it's your fault. You'll try good luck fixing it. But if it's their fault, then they'll fix it for free.
Isn't it their responsibility to make sure that it works?
Pretty much.
Well, up until the jack in your wall. If they supply the router equipment, then they're supposed to take care of that. But if you buy your own, you're on your own. And then anything, you know, beyond the wall or the router, if you purchase it from them, is up to you.
Yeah,
so
I bought the modem. Everything up to the computer is theirs. And so they installed up to there. Computer works fine most of the time. And it's their little cable light that flashes on the modem.
So I guess if you have the money, pay the $50 and then call them out every day.
You know what? I have been thinking about that. If this whole, like, running the new line, which is, they still haven't done it. They have everything all marked out. It's been about 2 weeks since they marked it out. So I'm just sitting here waiting. You know, looking at all the pretty...
Oh, man, things you look forward to in your day.
Yeah, the spray paint's on the... Just waiting for that line to be dug. And, you know, then if that doesn't work, then I probably will purchase the insurance and have them out every day.
I can just imagine him sitting in his window staring out there like the little boy who can't go play with the other kids.
And that's the problem, too, is that when you call up and you're like, yeah, look, I have this issue, and they pretty much ignore whatever you say.
Yeah.
And they say, all right, step one, we want you
to... I know, and they
to,
know less than you do.
They just read from their scripts.
Yeah, they just read from there.
And that's like when you go to Best Buy and you buy a TV. Sir, would you like to buy the service package for this? Oh, in case you screwed up? Yeah. So you might have made the product wrong, so therefore I should pay you extra money in case you messed up. Okay, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think I'll do that.
You know, it was funny. I was at Best Buy when my friend... Big
Armando?
D, we'll call him Big D, worked there. And I was just talking with him because I was picking some up from my work. And this guy came in, he's like, look, I just need the cheapest graphics card you have to replace this graphics card that I have. So can you just tell me where that is? And he's like, yeah, it's right there, sir, and that's exactly what you need. Just take it back, and you'll use it just fine. It's like $40. So he's like, okay. So he took it back, and I was at the store for quite a long time talking to Big D. And the guy came back, and he says, this card isn't even a graphics card. And I wasn't paying attention because it's not my customer anyways, and I don't work there. And it was actually a TV tuner card. And he was really, really pissed off that that had happened. And I was like, man, I was like, and he was so confident, you know, Big D, like, he's like, yeah, you just get that, and da-da-da-da, you know, man, installing the drivers, yeah. And he's saying all this stuff, and he didn't even know what he was selling him, you know what I mean? And that's just, I don't know. Everyone needs to become a little bit computer literate.
And that salesman is going to go far in the corporate structure.
Yeah. For all you computer illiterate people out there listening, if all you need is a replacement graphics card, go to, like, some computer renaissance place and get yourself a $2 S3 card from, like, 10 years ago. It'll work just fine.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's just, I guess we're finding that
they're getting a Dell.
Okay. Yeah, they're getting a Dell.
Yeah, they're getting a Dell.
They're getting a Dell.
Yeah. I guess, I mean, what we're finding out more and more and more and more is if you're just anybody, anywhere, you're going to need to be a little bit computer literate. And if you don't have experience with something, I think that you should just ask somebody. Usually, I think somebody knows someone that knows about computers. Ask somebody and try to get some advice before you go out. Because, I don't know, there's a lot of people portraying that they do know what they're doing, and companies like Microsoft that portray that they have some security, and people named Big D at Best Buy that sells TV tuners as graphic cards. So,
but I do see that, like, the whole
card in some sense.
Yeah, the,
it's like, sir, you
like
can
the
watch
whole
your cable
industry
on it if you'd like,
or the whole craft or art of IT management or just working with computers is getting to be, like, very similar to being a doctor or a dentist. Yeah. Is there the whole thing is so complex, and the rest of our lives are so complex. Unless you want to spend, you know, most of your free time figuring out that stuff, yeah, you want to pay somebody else to do it, or you try to rely on your good buddies over there to help you out. But it almost seems like there's almost going to be another, you know, socioeconomic class of IT people. So I already see it happening.
Well, that's a, you know, like, to discuss that is, oh, when geeks. When I go to geek impersonators, when I go to let's just say a restaurant or something like that, like Payway or something like that, and I sit down, and people that come in are of the, like, corporate nature, and they're on their lunch break, and then they're sitting down and they're talking about, like, yeah, we got this new firewall switch wireless router, you know, and they say all this stuff, and I'm sitting there listening to them, and they know every buzzword. But they don't know what they're talking about. And they're talking about, like, devices, like, connecting with each other that have, like, nothing to do with they're even physical, nothing to do with the other component that they're talking about. And they sit down, and they're, like, all confident, and they're, like, you know, shooting the crap and saying all this stuff to sound, like, big and intelligent. But, I mean, really, it's...
Actually, that kind of leads me to my theory of VR. I'll see what you have to think about of this. Like, to me, I think the computing industry, it's kind of like it's the new Hollywood. Like, everybody wants to be a part of it.
Yeah,
everybody
exactly.
wants to talk as if they're part of it. Like, I was in this group in my class at ASU. We had to go do some project. And I went, and everybody was just kind of talking, getting to know each other, you know, like the first when you're in a group and everybody's kind of saying what they do and who they are. And everybody's talking, and then everybody's kind of saying, like, trying to imply that they know a lot about computers. And somebody's like, ooh, yeah, and then I really like Google. And they start talking about Google. I'm like, and it was just really, like, I was like, man, these people are stupid. Like, they were trying really hard to... like, expound their knowledge
to
computers, like, to each other, like, as if that's the new, like, calling card or something. Everybody tries to be a part of it. It's kind of annoying.
Well, that's the thing. It's becoming this ultra-elite class because, you know, being a computer person or in the IT industry, you have the three Ps. You have power, property, and prestige. And especially, it's all based on knowledge. It's not about, you know, if you can understand this and make it work, you're better than a mechanic when your car's broken down. Because now you can, you know, you've helped somebody else go out and make money. And so you get a little piece of that. But it doesn't take you very long. But you can go around and do all this and take little chunks of the pie and accumulate a whole lot of surplus value relatively easily and efficiently. And so, yeah, everybody wants to go, you know, say, I know about some computer stuff because they're making alliances.
I know about some e-web business.
That problem actually extends far from, like, the low-end people all the way up to, like, the guys that do know about computers. I have a constant problem being in, like, IRC channels, which is the place, if you don't know anybody specifically up in your physical area, to find people that know knowledge about computers and ask questions or learn or just generally just hang out. And I constantly find that there is a huge, huge amount of people trying to, like, outdo each other, or they have this, like, this way of speaking to where they say, I don't ask questions, I tell you things and stuff like that. And or they say, like, you ask, like, something about something you've never done, and it's not even, like, a typical thing to go out and even look up information on. You try to ask this arbitrary question, and they're like, why don't you just read the manual? They're like, well, I don't even know where to find the manual. You know what I mean? And
like, one guy spent, like, 2 years learning something, and then, like, another guy comes along and he wants to learn it. And he's like, you don't know that? That's like, I know that.
Yeah.
That's basically how it is.
But see, that's a whole power trip.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. IRC is one
big
power
Thoril.
Trip.
That's like
Arbitorian.ath.cx.
Exactly. Go there and harass him.
That's what it's constructed to be.
And then put him on the door when he starts talking.
That's the way it's set up. like kicking people out and just the whole atmosphere.
But see, that's the problem. That's the problem is that, see, I just mentioned Thoril's name, but then that's going to make him even more excited. That's the problem. Is that even when you talk to somebody and they act like an ass, and you're like, dude, you're an ass. They're like
thank you.
Then they're like, I know. So then they boot you out of the server. You know what I mean?
they just want the attention.
And basically, they probably, most likely they don't even have the $60,000 plus year jobs, and they just sit in there, you know, and they know this piece of information, and they're like in there in their underwear, and they don't know any, you know, They haven't achieved success in the corporate world, but they do know about such and such thing. So to fill all that void of all the power, property, prestige that most people try to achieve in some form or another, depending on what your level of what you think quality is in life, they try to fill that void with that. And it's really displeasing.
That's really one of the big key factors in that is the anonymity over the Internet. Like the guy Thoreau, he wouldn't say something like that to your face.
Oh, exactly.
He probably wouldn't even, like, meet you to your face.
Yeah.
And we live in the same town. Like, I know where he lives, but...
Did you hear that? He knows where you live.
This whole show... Actually, we just organized this whole show to do a thorough rant.
Exactly.
All right. I'm not giving him any more popularity ever again on this show, but... all right. I'm going to shift gears here. And article really doesn't discuss too much, but we're hearing new news about the new consoles that the video game makers are getting into, like PlayStation 3 and the GameCube, and it wouldn't be the GameCube, but it's Nintendo's new console. So this is the first article that I've read about them doing
Game Hypercube.
Is that what it's going to be called?
No.
Okay. So I guess at this point they're just trying to find new ways is to offer new types of games which allow consumers to play both on the GameCube and the Game Boy Advanced. So I think right now game makers are trying to find a new niche of entertainment with the variety of hardware and capabilities out there versus before it was 2D, and then it was like 2D with more color, and then it was 2D with like better 2D graphics. Well, that goes on with more color. And then it goes to 3D, and now it's internet, communicating with your friends while you're playing online, providing an extra piece of equipment like a DVD player. Along with it, GameCube is doing the attachment of the Game Boy Advance to have maybe Metroid first on the Game Boy to work with Metroid on the GameCube and have more features.
I think gaming peaked with the Super Nintendo. Everything else beyond that is just for show.
I'll second the motion.
See, that's awesome you said that because I'm totally in agreement to that. And a lot of people I say, I'm like, I think Super Nintendo was like the best console ever made because it provided good graphics, and what happened, along with other things, but what happened with that type of system is that, well, the graphics couldn't go overboard. I mean, you can't develop, like, insanely intense 3D graphics or anything like that. You could, however, have nice quality, very good quality 2D graphics. So when you are restricted from selling a game based on graphics, you tend to think in every sense about the content of the game.
Yeah, and better games.
And so I think that unique balance that they had was allowed them to create good content in the game and, I mean, enjoyable graphics.
I don't know. I think we have it good these days with, you know, all the new games coming out and then the old Super NES games coming in on Game Boy Advance. So that works.
Yeah, that's true.
But as far as the story goes, like, when you're, if you're going to have three consoles all working in the market at once, you pretty much are going to have to carve out a niche for your console. That's the only way it's going to work, which is what they're trying to do now. Nintendo's trying to do the Game Boy Advance / GameCube thing, and Xbox is trying to be the mature console and probably eventually trying to be like the home media center. And PS2 is trying to have as many games as possible and all the hot games and everything. But, yeah.
I think it's actually the Xbox that you can buy a remote for it now, too.
Oh, I got a remote right there?
Yeah.
Well,
you need to buy the remote to use the DVD player. Xbox comes with a DVD player, but you can't use it unless you buy the $30 remote.
Okay. Which, as somebody pointed out, like, you can buy a GameCube and a standalone DVD player for the same price you can buy an Xbox.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily that great of a deal.
And actually, the reason that they did that, they're trying to cop some more money back off the money they're losing. Because this year alone, I think, are in total, the Xbox project has lost $358 million.
Which,
that's all just a front, though. You know? Like, because they have to lose money somewhere so they can, like, make money other places. They make tons of money in games and overselling their software. They have to be like, oh, well, we lost this much money on Xbox, but we made this much money in software.
But there is some, there is some major truth to that, because the machine itself, like, just having a GeForce 3 card in there, when it came out at the same time that GeForce 3 was out, just to buy the card alone in the store was $300.
Yeah,
they're losing money on it, which
they are definitely losing money, but it just justifies them charging $200 for their operating system that is cost them like the CD and a box.
It's what they need to break into the market. See, to me, it infuriates me because that is the definition of monopoly to me. They're willing to lose a bunch of money on it now because they know it'll pay off later. So they're just sacrificing the market now. They know if they can get an Xbox in every home, they're eventually going to make it, you know, people are going to buy Xbox 2, they're eventually going to make it back in licensing fees for their software. So, and the fact, I mean, they haven't innovated anything in the software, in the video game market. They buy companies, they freaking, like, all they do is buy out other companies and take their ideas. Like, they haven't done one original thing for themselves.
You don't own this video console, you license it from Microsoft.
Yeah. We can come collect it at any time.
Yeah. And actually, that's, I was talking to this one guy who was on IRC, and he actually works for Sun Microsystems. And, the CEO of Sun Microsystems, I don't remember his name right now, but he really hates Microsoft. And the reason in being, I think, is because their products were really, like, I'm kind of getting in the sun right now, so that's partially why I'm bringing it up. But the products were really innovative as far as, of course, they developed their own OS. They've already had 64-bit processor and operating system architecture for a few years now. They're one of the biggest developers for the business market for like quad processor, 32 processors, high-end database systems. They're using you know, instead of Ethernet, they'd use fiber optics, their SCSI Ethernet. I mean, the graphics cards were high-end for their time. They included, I got these two 20-inch monitors, which are totally cool. They have remote controls to change the settings for the monitor. I mean, how cool is that? They had optical mice, you know, from age-old. So, I mean, there's a lot of people that made a lot of innovations. And yeah, like, me and Spike are really into video games, and we really hate it to see that the maker for one of our favorite games, Perfect Dark on Nintendo 64, got bought out by Microsoft. So, you know, if we wanted to see a sequel on our GameCube, kiss it goodbye. You know what I mean? A lot of good makers, like Midway, would make games and put it on every console. But the problem now is that Microsoft will buy those makers and say, and just pull it towards their console.
Exactly. They're not increasing the value for consumers. They're decreasing it by taking away from others in the market. But as far as what you're saying about Sun, like, I can vouch that I've worked for small companies that are doing some innovative things, and the atmosphere that's out there is
we have to keep this quiet. We don't want Microsoft to find out what we're doing. Microsoft is going to try to take this or force this out of the market. And I've heard it said explicitly in those terms. Like,
yeah, that's one of the big problems with vaporware. It's like a company is developing something, and then Microsoft finds out about it, and they say, oh, we're going to do this too. Another company just, like, gives up, and then Microsoft ends up not making it, and then it disappears.
Which brings us back full circle to the article, because that's what I don't like about things like this. Like, tell us about it when it's just about to come out. Like, don't spread all this vaporware everywhere. Like,
exactly.
Anybody can, I can come out and announce my new console for 2005. It doesn't mean anything. Just show us when you have some hardware.
Yeah.
Which, actually, I do want to come out right now and announce I'm coming out with a new video game console for 2005. So it's going to be called the Spike Master. So
the Spike Master.
You don't
send your money to Spike.
See, the thing is, what's really neat, what's really neat about this environment is if you want something, you could probably announce that you're going to do it, and then somebody will make it for you.
That's true. That's a good idea.
Yeah, so we can talk about kind of some of the functions we want to do.
Yeah, we'll talk about that after.
Yeah,
that.
We'll do a press release.
Awesome. Actually, I had something that came into my mind, but then it just totally disappeared. But still get plenty of content, so I'm going to move on to that. Tesla can be sued in the U.S. In a 46-page decision that became public Friday, which basically was just after January 10th, U.S. Judge Stephen Wilson said a lawsuit against Charmin Networks could proceed since Kaza software had been downloaded and used by millions of Californians. Kaza is a peer-to-peer file-sharing software which is not based in the United States, so until recently it hasn't been prosecuted like Napster has. The company had filed a motion to dismiss the lawsuit, arguing that it is not bound by U.S. laws since it did not have substantial contacts in California. And I like what the judge says here. Given that Charmin's Kaza software has been downloaded more than 143 million times, it would be more cavil to deny that Charmin engages in significant amount of contact with California residents. Wilson also wrote, he said, many, if not most, music and video copyrights are owned by California-based companies. So
it doesn't mean anything, though. So what if they can sue them? It doesn't mean that they're going to get CSN
yeah.
the money.
Yeah, it doesn't. That's kind of a new twist on trying they're trying to bend the law a little bit there. But I don't know. I've never been a proponent of pirating stuff to, like, the nth degree that a lot of people are doing now. I mean, I've done a bit of pirating myself, but it was basically I wanted to use some $500 piece of software and see how it worked, and I didn't have the money to pay for it, so I'm going to download it.
Well, what is that? Like, I don't pirate software, but when there's software that I don't want to pay for that I want to use, I mean, I do download it off the internet.
I don't agree in pirating, like, to the nth degree, like I said, that people do nowadays.
Well, I do it to, like, the N-1 degree, is it?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, that's a little better. You're okay.
Pirated software.
No, well, there was a guy that just got arrested for, you know, downloading 600 MP3s in one day.
Did they find
yeah.
that guy?
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, they got
horrible. I can't believe they made Verizon give out that information.
Yeah, which is a violation of some privacy agreements.
Yeah, exactly.
And also, you're using these people's services and their programs in order to do something that's breaking the law.
Yeah.
So, is it the individual that's absolutely at fault for being able to do that? For having it.
Well, that's the same logic by which they sue gun manufacturers for enabling people to shoot each other.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like the programs are used for a lot of other good things, but like sharing open stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Like, to me, you can't condemn P2P in its entirety just because even if 99% of the stuff out there is illegal, that doesn't, I mean, it has a legal use. Therefore, you can't blame that, you know. But
everything has an illegal
use. But no, in that
case, there's a reason with it.
And you have done that, so.
Yosh. No, but... But now, in that other case, what you just say, P2P?
Peer-to-peer.
Oh, that 99% of the stuff is illegal.
I was saying, if it is that much,
pretty close, though.
Yeah, pretty,
it's probably,
pretty high.
Yeah, it's right about that high. So how can we get around that? If 99% of the stuff is illegal that it's used for, what's that 1%? That's like, you know, you can put that in the same basis as the guns, is pretty much its whole purpose is to kill or to destroy stuff, like in target practice. But yet, it's our First Amendment right.
Well, next month, I'm going to open up a case to Burger King because I feel that I've been poisoned by their fattening Whoppers.
But you were putting cyanide in it. So. But I mean, that company that manufactured the cyanide, aren't they at fault?
Yeah, that's that whole thing is a huge, huge, huge world of debate and conversation. My take on it is it's going to happen, and I don't really have a problem with piracy with, in some degrees, but I'm saying that in myself, I mean, I pirated things, but I haven't done it to where I disagree with some things that people have done where their entire machine is pirated, it, not the hardware, but the software. They use the software to make, you know, money off of it. I think
Wired magazine put it best when their last issue, on the cover, it said something like, "The music industry is going down." And the picture, had a picture of the Hindenburg on fire, falling towards the ground. And like, I read a comment somewhere by someone that said basically they can do whatever they want at this point. The cat's out of the bag. Like, for example, they used an allegory of marijuana. People, the government has been spending millions and millions of dollars trying to stop people from using drugs, allegedly. And, you know, they failed completely. It's still out there everywhere. And that's a physical commodity. Do you really think you're going to be able to stop people from taking something that's not even a physical commodity, just digits, into their computer when there's a vast stream, there's a network that goes all across the world? Like, is it even feasible to stop that now that it's reached the point that it has?
Exactly. Like, all these music companies are trying to develop copyright protection. And, you know, like, it'll last for a month until somebody cracks it. And, like,
yeah,
they're just going to keep wasting more money trying to prevent it.
Yep.
And it's not going to work.
As long as you got a pair of speakers and a microphone, you know, that's all you need to circumvent it.
Yeah, but then it gets to the point where it's really not worth listening to, and you're just going to go buy this.
Yeah, yeah, but I mean, there's some good speakers and some good microphones, so to speak. You know what I mean? Yeah, there's always going to be a way around that.
You could always just use the line-in.
Yeah, totally.
There's some people I know that have, like, at least 80 gigs of music, you know, on their hard drive, that, I think, has gone a little too far.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, I know somebody that took the... he would hang out on IRC, constantly get new albums and download them. And he had, while he was at college, he had people constantly go up to him saying, "Hey, man, I want this new CD, such and such." And he would actually take it, burn the CDs, and sell them for, like, $7 a piece.
Really?
That's crazy. Man, that is like...
He said he made a few $1,000.
Yeah.
That's even worse than peer-to-peer. That's like making money.
Right, now, if you're just using that for your own personal enjoyment,
it's
not going to go
so
anywhere.
It's wrong, but it's not as...
It's just having the music on your machine and just using it for your own enjoyment is much more justifiable than burning CDs.
Work.
That's actually like bootlegging.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's major bootlegging.
Like, honestly, I'll admit, I've downloaded programs and used them without registering them or, like,
I've got actually about
stuff,
12 of them sitting right behind me that are illegal.
But, I mean, I've also downloaded music of a lot of bands I never heard of that I never would have heard of and heard their songs and liked them and purchased their albums for $13.95 at my local record store. So it cuts both ways.
Yeah, I did that, too.
I've done that. I've done that a lot.
A lot of bands are doing that now. They're releasing some of their songs on their site so you can, like, go and listen to them and download them and share them for free.
Yeah.
In hopes that people will go buy their album.
Yeah, I've borrowed, like, well, not borrowed, because I've gotten, like, MP3s from friends. And so, like, you know, they're playing a song on their computer. I'm like, "Hey, cool, what is that?" And I'm like, "Well, here, can you, like, you know, email me one of those or whatever, and I'll listen to it." I'm like, "Oh, that's awesome." You know, and I might go buy a CD. So there are benefits. But, you know, in the bigger picture of this whole thing, maybe is it a possibility of the undoing or the rethinking of the capitalistic society? Like, obviously capitalism is superior, but how do you
obviously for the capitalist it is.
I am Mr. Capitalist.
Well, but I don't think it's the destruction of capitalism. I just think it's the next major phase shift in capitalism.
Well, like, I think it's more of getting to a blend, because both you know, communism and capitalism and in its extreme pure form, both fail very quickly.
Yeah, they do.
And so we're just shifting a little bit more towards the in-between, where we find their homeostasis for our economic system. And we still have quite a ways to go. We're seeing it change a little bit more.
Which that reminds me of, whenever I think of what that will become, is it reminds me of what happens when you see people on Star Trek The Next Generation. And they go
back. But not Voyager. Let's make that clear.
Voyager sucks.
Yeah.
So when they go back to Earth and you see how the planet is,
mm-hmm.
it seems like everyone's just kind of come to a balance, which could possibly be extremely boring. But
well, think about it. Is the only way that, like, pure socialism will work, or pure communism, is if we had, you know, an unlimited power supply and, like, replicators, that you could generate your own power, then you could also produce anything that you wanted.
Yeah, the whole supply-demand economy is based on limited supply.
Right.
Once you have unlimited supply, it all falls apart. There's no need for it anymore. Yeah.
Exactly. And then you can have this utopian society where you can sit around and do whatever you want because all of your physical needs are taken care of by essentially this one or two devices.
So
but the problem because is getting those one to two devices of infinite power and infinite supply.
Well, I've got one, but we're going to need a second one.
Well, yeah, you have the infinite supply. You just need the weird power source for
it. Exactly.
Hydrogen's supposed to be the new power supply.
Oh, beautiful stuff.
I guess this kind of makes us the hippies of the new age.
E-hippies?
No,
are we the e-hippies?
Because we do this really neat little like bounce between, you know, just like the technology realm of capitalism and socialism. Is we want everything to like work together and work efficiently and all that, but yet we still want differences. We still want innovation.
Yeah, that's what happens when we talk about this. Is I feel this small fear in the back of my head. I'm like, well, if all this like makes sense and sounds really good and we're pushing for it and we're talking about it in the show, as if it's supposed to be the next step, do I even enjoy that next step? You know what I mean? Like it makes sense, but just because it makes sense doesn't mean it's really going to work.
Right.
I don't know. I think I'll be pretty happy when I get my holodeck and my replicator.
Oh,
probably won't see me for a couple months.
A couple months, yeah, maybe.
Completely stop work. Yeah, I don't know. That's another thing, too, is that there's so many things nowadays to play with that you could just throw yourself in for hours. Pestilence got... man, what the heck is it? It's a... Okay, we'll just say it's a role-playing game. I forget the name of it.
Online one?
No, it's Elder Scrolls 3. Hmm. And, you know, they have, like, world editors and character stuff, and you can create your own world, and on top of the game, you can add to it. And a lot of people are spending a lot of time, you know, doing that. And, I mean, I play an online game myself, when I'm bored and I don't have anything to do, then I'll just sink into it, and 2 hours, 3 hours go by, and I just wake up, and it's better than alcohol and drugs.
It's a complete fantasy world that you can get wrapped up into. That you don't have to have any real human contact with.
The only time it becomes self-destructive is when you no longer are productive in your life and you haven't taken a shower for like 2 weeks.
Well, if you really want to have a deep, controversial conversation, then you can ask, is that really bad? If they thrive in that online world, then is that not as good as thriving in this reality world?
Good conversation, actually, because these worlds are so real.
Because they make that fantasy realm.
They make that their primary one.
Yeah, they make that their primary one, which then influences everybody who just comes in there, makes that realm better for them.
Yeah.
And which then they can have their little release or their little fantasy realm, then go outside there and really produce a little bit better because they've had their break.
Yep. And in some ways, that distinction is starting to fade between online, like when people marry their online girlfriend or when people sell their online paraphernalia on eBay, like, you know, the lines can blur there. Yep. And that's just the start. Like, who knows where at some point.
People have, like, actually quit their jobs and just play, like, EverQuest for a living and sell stuff on eBay.
Yeah.
And they make enough money to do that.
Dang, I'm so jealous.
Oh, man. Yeah, but I would just become so starved for human contact. Yeah, after the first like 4 hours.
That's why they have porn sites and they're trying to make them as real as possible.
No, seriously though, that's interesting because that's why some people, the reason they do that is because they are starved for human contact, and that's the only way they can get it is because maybe there are people who don't have any friends in real life or something, and they go on and they have a clan that they hang out with.
That's like the guy. That's probably like the guy that gets his red stapler stolen all the time in Office Space. Excuse me,
my stapler
and. Yeah.
Yeah, he's probably like a pimp in the online world.
Like the seventh elder of Omicron.
That is the best movie to describe like office environment. Like it's so awesome. I've seen it mentioned like plenty of times, like on IRC or even just like on websites where the subject was pertinent to mentioning it, and they'll be like, I'm gonna need you to come in on Saturday. Because we're short a few hands,
Yeah, okay. Those TPS reports, we have a new cover sheet for those.
And I'm going to need you to come in on Sunday, too. All right? Okay.
All right, those of you who haven't seen the movie can tune back in at this point.
Office Space is like the Clerks for, like, The Office.
Yep.
It's the Clerks of its generation.
Sweet. It's the Michael Jordan of Office movies.
Yeah. The Michael Jordan of Office movies. Oh, man. All right. I guess I'm going to throw this small tidbit in here. It's probably not anything too important. It's just basically Microsoft was going to name their next server Windows.net. They skipped it because .NET sucks. Java rules. And actually, I was just joking about that. But it's they changed it to Windows Server 2003.
What freaking drone in their marketing department thought that was a good idea? Like, hopefully no one will get .NET confused with .NET. So,
we're all going to convert to .NET, which .NET was basically and is basically another way to consolidate, or not consolidate, but bring all the Microsoft services under one window in an environment to where they can talk to each other anytime, any place, anywhere.
Anyhow.
So.
Well, it sounds like a beautiful thing, but then. Imagine with all their patches on.
It's not a beautiful person running.
I don't know if
patches.
Anybody's seen the movie Antitrust, but it sounds a lot like what they did in there. If you've seen Antitrust, you know what I'm talking about. You should go watch it. That's a good movie.
Yep.
Yeah, there you go.
I'll have to go see it.
And I think I'll end on this story, which is it's a deep story because we're let me just talk about it, and then we'll go into the deepness. What lies beneath? Why Microsoft should build its next version of Windows on top of Linux? For any of you guys that don't know about Macintosh OS X, OS X, that's basically the Macintosh Windows Manager built on top of a customized BSD operating system. So the idea posed here, the idea proposed here is to build Microsoft's Windows Manager with all of its, things that people are used to using and the way it functions and its functionality.
Well, its applications.
Its applications to run it on top of a Linux system. And the quote here is, Linux is better, faster, stronger than whatever is living under XP right now. So basically, adding the Windows Manager on top with the compatibility to their applications would also, in this article is mentioned too, would help in their antitrust situation. Now, I have read too that Microsoft might, and it's not anything official, but it's they might be putting Microsoft server services on a Linux operating system. So basically, you can install Linux as like your server, except the things that are pulling the domain together. And kind of like NetBUI and all, not NetBUI, but NetBIOS and Winds and all that stuff would all come under Microsoft services built onto the Linux server. Of course, I'm sure they're having a hard time cope with that idea because it's totally against their entire business model. But it seems that things might be changing because competition is good and there is competition.
Linux already has better versions of all those tools, though.
Well, of course.
That's a good point.
Listen, you know, wouldn't it be easier to, like, do like a Windows GUI interface for GUI. There we go. Sorry.
It's kind of GUI.
It can be under the right circumstances.
On top of the Linux, actually, what it's doing, and so then make it a whole lot more
stable.
But it would make it more comfortable for people to change to do that.
Yeah. Well,
but because then that's really what they see is the Windows. Yeah. You know,
but what they have to be afraid of, Microsoft that is that once they switch and they get used to that GUI, the Microsoft GUI, running on top of Linux, and they start playing a little bit with Linux, and then they're like, then that's the switch. For them to say, screw that, and then they go to the FTP site and download 3 ISO images for free, burn them to their CD-ROMs, and then just go flat out and get Linux on there.
Yeah, the easeability of switching is actually one of the things that would stop them, because, like, for example, Macintosh, that was one of the things they were promoting really big on their ads or Apple. They're saying, switch, it's really easy. I'm talking about how their apps are compatible. You can just plug and play and everything. So they want, Windows tries to set itself apart as opposed to the other people who are trying to make themselves more eased because
you know, everybody else wants them to switch it because everybody right now is on Windows or a lot of people. But anyway, if Bill Gates is as competitive as everybody says he is, then I think right now he just wants to stomp Linux no matter what. So he never let that happen. But
he wants to stomp everything.
Yeah. And good luck at this point.
Yeah. I mean, just, like, I don't know. Like, I'm sure that, what's your nick now? I totally forgot it.
Captain Alibaba.
Captain Alibaba.
Alibaba. Okay.
Dude.
I'm used to calling you Freak Nick, but Captain Alibaba will probably concur with me is that if you've, like, used Linux for over a year, and it doesn't, it, like, Linux is a bland term. It's, like, anything that's open source software. So you could use, like, any of, like, 10 different window managers to the way that your desktop functions, to different distributions on how to maintain and install and you know, overall use of an operating system. Like, if you just use that for a year and get everything set up, which isn't hard to run, you can play your DVDs, you can burn your CDs, you can play your MP3s, you can, you know, use Office Suite, and there's different Office Suites to choose from. You can program, you can do server services, you can do websites, whatever you want. And it's free. Now, one thing, too, is that you really want to contribute afterwards by, like, telling a friend about it, or you want to, let's just say you have enough money in your pocket to send money off to a developer and say thanks, you know, and put a thank you card. You know, you really want to do that in the end, because we're not trying to say use it because it's free, but if you have used this thing for, like, a year and you see all the options that are available to you, you're just going to if you're somebody that really even cares about technology at all, if you don't even care about the technology, you're probably not going to appreciate anything of it. But if you care about it at all, or you think any of that stuff is cool, you're going to instantaneously fall in love with it, and you're going to say, you know, why would I ever go back to using Microsoft unless I had to open up, and you know, a Microsoft Excel file or something like that, which you can probably do in Linux anyways under Wine or WineX or some programs like Happy Word, OpenOffice. And so,
well, speaking for myself, the first major open source application that I've used was Mozilla, and personally I was, like, amazed at how, you know, just, like, download it and go, like, and I was like, wow. And
yes,
the functionality of it, I was like,
Mozilla is really good.
Yeah, I was like, right away, I was like, the functionality was just better than IE. Like, right away I was like, okay, and I'm using IE because of why? Like, it's, at this point, it's really getting to the point where it can be, or at least really close to the point where I think it is ready to make a breakthrough to, like, your average user doesn't need any special. A lot of people don't want to, like VR was saying, have to go and learn all these things for themselves. So at this point, it is getting to the point where I think open source can be applied to those people as well.
Yeah. And it's also,
obviously, it varies by application, but.
Yeah. Actually, my brain just quit on me.
The one thing I noticed when I first started using Linux was that it was no harder to learn in the first place than it was for me to learn to use Windows the first time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when I how long ago did you start using it?
Linux?
Yeah.
A year or two.
See, I started back probably like 5-6 years ago.
Yeah, back then I can imagine
yeah.
It would be a lot harder.
And I had to read for about 2 weeks. To really understand even how to get it installed.
And you don't usually
actually,
read, so
yeah,
that was really hard.
So I started.
You can read
probably on the slowly, but it's happening.
He moves his lips a lot, so he can only.
Hooked on Phonics work for slip mode.
His lips get tired, and then he has to stop for a while.
Hooked on Phonics, me helped work.
So basically, to getting that installed took a lot, but nowadays it's. I started out on the. One of the more advanced versions or distributions, which was Slackware, back then, and it's kind of I was building it from scratch, and it was pretty tough. But
wasn't that like the only distribution back then?
No way. I had I've got Red Hat 5.0 CDs. I got the boxes actually.
Really? That's that old?
Yeah. Wow. Slackware's been around for
well, yeah, but I mean, I thought Red Hat was like
yeah. If it was on 5.0 at that point, he's saying, then it must be really old.
Yeah, like, it's even older
no, I mean,
than that.
I know how old Slackware is. I know it was, like, the first distribution, but I thought Red Hat was,
Red
like,
Hat, yeah.
Like, as fast as they've been going through their point releases lately, I figured 5.0 would be, like, 2 years ago.
Oh, no. 5.0 is, like, I was in high school when 5.0 was out.
So that's just one of the things that's evidence that the more people working on this, on these open source
exactly.
things, that the exponential, essentially new generations become exponentially quicker.
Yeah, open
just like
source.
The little viruses that get on there and double themselves in 8 minutes now.
Eight seconds
rather than, what is it, 30?
30 minutes.
30 minutes of code red?
Yeah.
That's an absolutely mind-blowing evolution.
And then, I mean, another thing to add, too, is that we talk about Linux a lot, but it's really not just that. That's kind of what the John Q. Public is now hearing this word Linux, but Sun has announced a while back that they offer Solaris operating system, which is a Unix style, to the x86 platform, which basically your Pentium and your Antelon processors can run it. PC.
When did that happen?
Not too long ago.
You can download Solaris for the x86
yep.
now?
Yep. You can download it.
I'll have to look into that.
And then also there is BSD, which is FreeBSD, NetBSD, and OpenBSD, which is based off the BSD distribution and AT&T, their works from a long time ago. And that's open source as well and runs on a variety of platforms. I think there's over 70 platforms that the NetBSD runs on, and Linux, of course, runs on multiples of platforms as well.
Linux will run on your toaster.
It does, actually.
It does. That's a proven fact.
A little bit of work.
Beowulf cluster, I mentioned.
Beowulf cluster of toasters.
Yeah. So, and also, there is, and if anyone knows, if I jumble on this, they're going to slap me around. What's the other one that's out there?
Dude, I'm ready to slap you.
Other what?
I've got my hand poised.
What's the operating system that they had sold to Palm? And then they had stopped using it. It's, oh my goodness, I can't believe I forgot this one.
Windows CE?
No, it's not. No, it's not Windows. It's a Unix. It's a Linux style.
Oh, it's like WAP?
No, it's not WAP. It's, man.
There's BSD, there's Linux, there's... I have no idea what you're talking about.
We'll get back to you on this one next month.
Actually, if you guys just chatter for just a moment, let me find it.
And once again, we see some of Slip's OCD come into effect.
Yes.
He will not sleep, eat, or do anything
until
else.
Until figure something out.
Yeah.
I'm the same way.
It's rather fun. I just want to pick on him while he's doing it. Distract him as he gets into it.
What is that? You want to read that URL that you're visiting right now?
Yeah, come on. Do that later, dude. Exercise some self-control. Seriously. What are you talking about now? An open source platform that runs on multiple devices?
Yeah, he said there's this operating system that they sold to Palm, and Palm stopped using it, and that's what he's trying to find
out. Yeah, and they're still trying to get developers now to pick it up.
We'll give you a little play-by-play on Slip Mode's internet search.
Yeah. Folks, he is keying up.
Actually, and he's at the porn sites.
Actually, if you this website's actually you couldn't even read it on the air without saying a cuss word.
Yeah, I've seen that site before. There's some
good
articles on there.
Goodness, I can't believe I can't find it.
It's called FudgeMicrosoft.com.
Only it's not called FudgeMicrosoft.com, if you know what I mean.
All right, so this is the end of our program. We've appreciated having you around for the month of February. Now make sure to give that little filly in your life some. Something that'll make her happy on the 14th, and next time you see us, well, we could be at war with Iraq. Who really knows these days? But
yeah, and that's really been edging on me lately. We just want to do some economic sanctions with North Korea, even though they've already said, you know, screw you all, we have nuclear weapons, and we're taking, or close to it, or they've developed nuclear weapons. At the same time, they're taking the first strike initiative, and we don't even have troops over in that area.
Well,
but Iraq,
that's exactly it. They have the nuclear weapons. Iraq is going to, so we're trying to stop them. We don't want them to become the next North Korea. North Korea, it's already too late. The cat's out of the bag, so to speak.
Yeah, but still, even if we go in there, we take out Hussein.
Yes!
Did you find it?
Through the skills of talking in Pound Linux on Freenode, I found out that it is BOS.
Oh.
Oh, that's what you're talking
about?
Yeah,
be honest.
Well, that sounds that really stinks.
Okay.
We all knew
shot,
that already.
Shot
we
app on Pound Linux is saying BOS was awesome. Too bad it's a bit dead now, which is basically an open BOS. Yeah, see?
Yeah, BOS was like, back when Windows 95 came out, BOS was like the big thing. It's like, because Windows 95 was like an emulated 32-bit operating system, and BOS was a true 32-bit operating system, and Microsoft got a lot of flack for that.
And back then, Jaguar was the emulated 64-bit gaming console.
Yeah.
Wasn't
math.
That out
Wait,
for only
math.
Like a week?
Wait, I want you to do the math. It's 64,
okay.
Right?
Here's a tip.
And Super NES is 16? Do
Here's
the math.
A tip out there. If you launch a console like the one I'm doing in 2005, don't let your slogan be do the math, okay? That's not why people buy video games.
Do the math. $300 for a system that produces 5 games. Do the math. Okay, if you just do the math, they don't purchase this.
All right, I think it's time to sign off here.
All right, the official ribbon has been cut by Spike about the sign-offage.
This is Spike. Glad to have you. Be sure to love your mother always.
Be sure to love your mother always.
Wow, I have a tear in my eye from the sheer beauty of that sentiment. This is VR saying later.
This is Captain Alibaba. Good night.
And this is Slipmode saying that we'll be seeing you next month, and we're toying with the idea of doing this on television so you can see our foggy faces.
Trust me, we all are a bunch of radio faces.
And but it could be pretty cool, and actually you might not even see us because we might be doing it in all cloaks.
Ooh.
With bags over our head.
Well, not bags. Just
so it'll pretty much be identical to the radio show, is what you're
saying. Except that you might see some motion out of one of us as we start to fidget. And then you'll go, wow, that cloak is kind of moving.
But we will have monkeys occasionally jump across the stage. So I will be signing out and see you next month.